Hello and welcome to Pulled Up, the podcast where Coral Springs High School teachers tell us about the films that pull them up so they can come in and pull up the teachers every darn day. My name is Russell Aronson. I'm the Cambridge School Support Coordinator for Coral Springs High School, and I teach the Cambridge Media Studies program. Behind the camera and on the boards, we have Mr. John Place, who runs our TV production program, and our guest for this episode, Ms. Scavetti, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are glad you're here. So there are three parts to every show. We start off talking about how we got into teaching and how that all has kind of played out. And then we talk about the movies, and I think we've got a really cool movie to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And then one of my favorite parts, the part where you get to answer questions from your own students.
All right.
All right. So you had an interesting, like everyone I've spoken to, you had an interesting pathway to teaching.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about how you first went into teaching to begin with.
Okay. Well, I knew pretty early on that I wanted to be a teacher. So I went to a college that was well known for that up in Syracuse. I'm from upstate New York. And, you know, just going to through those programs up there and doing all the student observations and student teaching. And I was able to teach for a few years right out of college at the same high school that I went to. Wow. And it was great. I loved it. I loved teaching. But unfortunately for all the new teachers that just graduated, the recession had just hit. So a lot of new teachers, including myself, we lost our positions, and that's when I decided to use that time to try something else. So I decided to try nursing school.
What made you decide to try nursing?
I was teaching a human anatomy and physiology class, and it was very more geared toward, you know, medicine. It was for kids who wanted to get into medical school and things like that. So it just, I didn't even realize, you know, that that was something on my radar. But then once I started teaching the class and looking at the medical aspect of science, I really wanted to dive into that and see if it was something that, you know, I could do.
And so into nursing school you went?
Yes. Yep. I got into nursing school. The nice part for me was I already had a lot of classes already taken care of because of my biology degree. So when I started nursing school, I just had to take the nursing classes. So, which those were, it was a great learning experience, but I quickly learned once we had to be on the floor and working with patients and doing clinicals that nursing school, it just wasn't something that I could do long term. I'm just someone who can't, I did not like seeing people who were very ill every day, all day. And a lot of those patients they were so ill, they weren't going to be leaving the hospital. So it was just a lot for me emotionally to handle, and it just wasn't for me. So.
And so back to teaching then.
Well, with nursing school, it allowed me to get a job at the pharmacy at the hospital. Okay. So then I worked at the pharmacy for probably, 6 or 7 years.
All right.
And it was all a great experience. So even though I didn't become a nurse, going through nursing school, getting the job in the pharmacy, I was still able to be in the medical world and use what I knew and what I learned, but I didn't have to be up dealing with patients all the time, or at all, really. So it actually was like perfect for me at the time.
So you found that kind of pathway in the career that better matched you and how that worked. So, okay, pharmacy, it was all going great. Then how'd you wind up back in the classroom?
We moved. I had gotten married and I had my son. We were up in New York, and then his father's job, he needed to relocate. So we relocated down to South Florida, and I had just happened to really just on a whim, like, I'm just going to see what Broward County has available for teaching. And I saw there was a position here and at Plantation. I applied. I didn't even finish filling out my application, and I was getting calls from people in the district telling me to hurry up and finish because Coral Springs really needed a science teacher.
Wow.
Yep. So I got everything in, had the interview with Dr. King, and That's how, and here I am. Yeah.
So, okay, so you're here. How did the forensics program come about?
The forensics program, again, that was definitely not even on my radar because I was very much into the whole medical aspect of science and things like that. But there was another teacher here who had been trying for years to get the program back at the school. I guess it used to be here.
Okay.
And then she got the program back at the school, but the same year they said they were bringing forensics in, had kids sign up, she actually decided to transfer to a different school.
Oh, wow.
So they needed somebody to teach it, and I wasn't teaching biology at the time, so I was like, oh, what's another elective? So they gave me forensics, and now it's like one of my passions. I love teaching that class. So it literally was dropped into my lap, and now it's one of my favorite things to teach.
It's funny how that happens, right?
Yeah.
Just the stuff that you weren't even looking for, and then all of a sudden, not
right.
only does it take off, but it's something that you want, you enjoy. That you
right.
love.
I love that class. Yeah. It's
so,
a great
like,
class.
How many sections of forensics do you have now?
This year, I have 3 sections of 40.
Wow.
So, and it's normally in science, we try not to have that many kids in the classroom because it's just so many,
right?
Especially when you're doing labs and things like that. But I wanted to make sure that as many kids who wanted to take it would be able to take it. So, in order to do that, you got to increase the class size, but it's working out perfectly. So,
you fell just kind of backwards into it, and now it's the biggest part of your schedule. It's
it's
one of our most popular science courses.
Yes.
So, what do you like? What do you like most about teaching forensics?
It's one of the big things that I like. And it's just seeing the kids' reactions to when they learn something. So we see all those forensic shows on TV and stuff like that. And then they start learning how it's really done. And, or even just recently, we just finished up a lab with fingerprints. So all the kids took their own fingerprints. And, you know, that was the cool, fun part. But then they had to actually analyze the fingerprints and look for these reference points in their own prints, which some, depending on who you are, some of the prints are really easy to see them, and some of them it's very hard. But it was very exciting for me to see them get excited when they would find these things in their fingerprints, or they would realize that not every fingerprint is the same and things like that. So just seeing them learning and them enjoying learning is really what brings me happiness. So I'm one of those lucky people that I found a career that I love coming to work every day. Like, I really do love coming and working with the kids and teaching them new things. And they teach me stuff, too. So, you know, they'll ask me questions sometimes, and I don't know the answer. So then I'll look it up, and we learn, you know, on the spot. So it's just great. I love working with the kids.
And I love that, too, because then it kind of takes that stress off. You're not expected to know everything, but you are modeling the behavior of, well, how do you learn about stuff?
Right, exactly.
And that is a much stronger skill than simply just saying, okay, can you repeat this information? Can you memorize this information?
Right, yeah.
Which has less and less value because anybody can look stuff up, but how do you judge what you're looking up?
Or how do you use it and apply that information? And that's like, forensics is fun because it's about crime. And, you know, everybody, maybe not everybody, most people can get into it. But one of the great things is with the class is, like you were just saying, they're applying the knowledge that they're being told about or that they're reading about. So I'll spend maybe a day and a half lecturing on something. And then the rest of that unit is all just actually applying what we were talking about. So they actually get to do the things that other real forensic investigators do.
And that application piece is just so important, right?
Yes.
And then that's what keeps them engaged in it.
Yes.
Very cool. So before we kind of move on to our next segment, where do you want to take the program next? Like, are you just happy with where it is, or what's like the next thing you would love to do with it that you haven't gotten to yet?
Forensics, the way we... I would love to find if there's some sort of way to get the kids, or maybe even break it up into two, like a 2-year program, like a forensics 1 and forensics 2, because there's just so much that we go over, and because the kids are actually doing things and we're not just reading out of the book and answering questions out of the book, you know, there's not as much time to finish everything. So it would be really great to have like a forensics one and a forensics two, so we really could dive into each topic more and spend more time actually applying the different, you know, strategies and the different skills that they learned for those topics. And the kids ask, they ask me all the time, oh, is there a forensics two I can take? And I'm like, not right now.
Maybe in the future.
Maybe, yes.
That's one of the reasons why we're here. So yes. You can talk about stuff and who knows?
Yep. We'll get there.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Absolutely. I think that ties a bow on the career stuff. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about a film called Remember the Titans.
Yes.
Which is going to be a blast. So we got to do some business. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
You smiling? Why are you smiling?
Football's fun.
You think football is fun?
Yes, no.
No?
Well, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by
now. No, it's not fun anymore. Not even a little bit.
Zero fun, sir.
All right.
Coach Boone's school board made the decision to put you on my staff. I did not hire you.
Well, I came up here to coach you.
I didn't ask to be assigned to your staff, so I guess we're both in a situation we don't want to be in.
Coach, if they keep on playing like that, we'll lose every game.
But I can guarantee you this, Coach. I come to win.
We will be perfect in every aspect of the game. Get up, boy! Get up! Get up! Get up!
You're still weak on the left side.
We're not weak on the left side.
It's not the problem.
What is the problem?
I don't need you up on my face all the
time. I don't care if you like each other or not, but you will respect each other.
I want you to tell me something about one of your teammates.
I'm rooming with Blue, sir. He wears those leopard spotted underwears, bikini style, sir.
Okay, maybe somebody who's not your roommate. Each one of you will spend time every day with a different teammate.
Does the term cruel and unusual punishment mean anything to you?
If you lose a game, they'll fire you.
One game, just like that.
Brother, don't you know me and your mama
went out on the town last night?
What did you say?
What happened to you?
Man, I just gave your mama a piggyback ride and she weighs twice as much as I do.
What's going on?
We wanted to let you know we was going to warm up a little different tonight.
We are the Tigers, mighty, mighty Tigers.
We don't let these people know who's going to win state, right?
Right.
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 Greek mythology, the Titans were greater even than the gods.
We're going to change the way we run.
They ruled their universe with absolute power.
We're going to change the way we block.
Football field out there tonight, that's our universe.
We're gonna change the way we win.
We don't let anything, nothing, come between us.
We are team.
And we are back with Ms. Cavetti, and we are here to talk about the film you chose, Remember the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
So I always begin doing my film geek thing,
okay.
And I do some research.
Okay.
This, like some of the typical research I do, like I'm looking at directors and cinematographers and stuff like that. I didn't go too deep into it. The director is Boaz Yakin. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. Remember the Titans is 2000. He also directed Now You See Me. He directed The Harder They Fall, mm-hmm. which have been well received in recent years. But I think two of the big things about this film, first of all, the cast.
Yes.
The cast is pretty unbelievable. So we have Denzel Washington, Will Patton, Donald Faison, Ethan Suplee, Hayden Panettiere, and Ken himself, Ryan Gosling.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he was in that.
Yes, yes. So that was really exciting. I saw, I'm like, oh my God, it's like baby Ken.
Yep, he's
right?
So young in that movie.
I know, he's just a little kid there. And also the soundtrack, which we're going to circle around to in a minute. Because yeah, the soundtrack is just, one banger after another. So tell the audience, in your own words, what's Remember the Titans about?
I know it's a football movie, but what I always get from that movie is that regardless of what adversity you're faced with, you can overcome it if you try hard enough. And sometimes it's something personal that an individual has to do by themselves, and sometimes it does involve teamwork, and you need more than one person to get to whatever that end goal is. And it's just one of those movies that I just, you know, I just love it. And I show it to the kids even now, and some of them have seen it, some of them don't, but they really get into it once we start watching it, and they're like, oh, that was such a good movie, that was such a good movie. And
it's so well constructed that it's impossible not to get into it. Even as, like, it's such a Hollywood inspirational movie, right?
It really is.
You know?
Yes.
And in the 2000s, like the early aughts, that was a big deal. There were a lot of these films.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it, and you don't see a lot of films like this anymore.
No, you don't.
And why do you, I was wondering, why don't you think we see films like this anymore? Because I don't know. I'm throwing you a stumper here, because I don't know. But
it could, maybe it's, we're so overstimulated now by all of the technology and the access that we have to entertainment, that maybe just those types of movies aren't, you know, it doesn't start out super, you know, exciting. I mean, right. It gets to that point and you start to see all the relationships develop between the different characters and things like that. But, you know, now it's just, it's easier to distract yourself or entertain yourself with short little clips than having to sit and watch an entire movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's just the times have changed, and that's easier to just watch some shorts on TikTok or whatever the kids watch now than it is to sit down and watch like an entire movie.
I think you're on to something there, because something I was thinking about as I was watching it, first of all, the performances are really what make the movie.
Yes.
Each individual actor's bringing the heat in a lot of different ways. They're all making mm-hmm. these very clear decisions. They seem to gel together. But the film works because of, you see each person's, like you said, you see each person's individual struggle, but then it comes together as a shared struggle.
Right.
And then that's mm-hmm. how it connects with you as an audience. And that takes time.
Right.
You know, you can't just pull that in 15 minutes. You have to let the characters develop and kind of bounce through that. So I think you're on to something there. the film teacher gives you high marks for your answer to that question. what's the, like, most memorable part of the film for you? Like,
there was one part, and I don't remember exactly what each character said, like, you know, word for word, but it's Julius and Gary, the two main players on the football team. And Julius is African American, Gary is white, and they're both very good football players. Like, they have all this talent on this team, and they just cannot seem to make it work. And, you know, Gary and Julius have this conversation, and, you know, Gary tries to point out, like, you know, where are you, man? You're supposed to, like, you know, be doing this during this play or whatever. And Julius is like, no, like, why am I going to, you know, give up my, you know, position or chance to do what I want to do to try to help a team that nobody's helping each other on it? And he brings up the fact, you know, Gary's the captain of the football team, and he brings up the fact that, you know, the leadership, it's going to be a trickle-down effect. Like, if the leadership isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, how can you expect the rest of the team to follow suit? So, and he kind of points that out to him, and then you almost see Gary thinking about, you know, he actually thought about it, and he's like, you know what, he's right. So then, you know, a couple scenes later, they're practicing, and Gary, and this is during the time when there's still, you know, big racial tension in that area. I can't remember exactly where it's taking place, but it's somewhere in the South. Mm-hmm. And Gary calls out a fellow white teammate for not doing what he was supposed to be doing. And once he called him out, that teammate, you know, walks off the field because he's mad, because he got embarrassed and yelled at. They bring somebody else on the field, and then everybody does what they need to do. And that's when you can really start see everybody come together as a team. But it took, you know, Gary, the captain, calling out his friend and going against, you know, the issues in society at that time. And, you know, just doing what was right instead of doing what was expected.
Doing what was right instead of doing what was expected. Yeah, that's the theme that just keeps coming back together. Yeah. And I was thinking about that. You have that quote from the coach, from Denzel, you will be perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, at first I'm like, well, this is awfully Hollywood, you know? It's right. Like, you will be perfect. But it doesn't just get dropped one time in the film. It's actually threaded through the film, and it mm-hmm. comes back all the way to the point where it comes back to the coach. And then how the players, when they start acting, believing they can be perfect and putting in their heads, you know, a little bit isn't good enough. I need to try to be perfect.
Yep.
And then it makes him reflect, even the guy who supposedly knows how to handle everything.
Mm-hmm.
He even thinks, well, am I perfect too? And I like the way that works. It's just this web of shared responsibility.
Yes.
And that was good. That and the line, you're overcooking my grits, coach, which is my quotable line from this. You're overcooking my grits. Mm-hmm. I just the screenwriter gets big numbers for that. And so I started doing some more research, and these games weren't even close. This team killed like everybody.
Yeah, they liked it. Once they found their stride, they were gone. Like they just, yeah.
They have the final game against Marshall, and it's a nail biter, and mm-hmm. and in real life they won 27-0, and it wasn't even close, you know. and usually that's like the other way around, right?
Right.
You
yeah.
know, it's like, oh, and then they dominated, and it's like, well, no, they dominated, and you actually made them look weaker, so that
during
there was
that one,
something.
You needed some drama, yeah. They needed something to keep, because it's like, yeah, it's like if the team keeps winning and winning and winning, it's like, okay, we get it. They're good.
And then they
yeah.
won again.
Woohoo, yeah.
And that's just not Hollywood, you
right.
know? And then the other thing that killed me is there's the scene where they throw the brick through the coach's house.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, they threw a toilet through the coach's house.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean,
they threw a toilet through, and they bought a toilet for the film to do it, and Disney's like, no, that's going to offend people. That's going to be too much.
Mm.
I was like, wow, that's interesting. So they downgraded from the toilet to the brick.
Jeez, I thought the brick was bad enough.
Right, right. I know. Remember the Titans. The other thing is the Jerry Birdier character, the one who gets into the car accident.
Yes.
And then later on, he became a Paralympian.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. then died in another car accident.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just so horribly tragic. But it's interesting because we're going to get this again in a future episode with someone else who's currently sitting behind the cameras. Another character who has this injury, and it seems like, oh, it's going to end. You're not going to be able to do any of the stuff you want anymore in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back from that. It's interesting to me how the levels of challenge in this, it was layered. It wasn't just, well, there are black kids and there are white kids. And it wasn't this oversimplified thing. The film's got layers to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I liked. And then, of course, the soundtrack.
Oh, my gosh, so amazing.
Do you remember from the soundtrack any favorite songs? I was thinking about it. I was listening to it this morning coming because,
Not that one. I feel like they overplayed that. Like, especially
for those of you in the audience, that's Mr. Play singing Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Oh, my gosh, we played that after every football game when I was in high school.
Really?
So that came out in 2000, so that was 4 years of that song after every home game during football season. So that, yeah, my brain can't handle that anymore. It's like PTSD. But the Up Around the Bend by Creedence Clearwater, right? Is that correct?
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that song, as soon as I hear that come out, it's like, it's just such a great song.
That's a pretty amazing band.
Yeah,
they really are. You young kids out there, you
got
CCR. You got to check that out.
Yep.
And even the score to the film was used by like NBC Sports. It was used by ESPN Sports. I'm listening to the theme and I'm like, wait a second. And I start looking around. It's like everybody bought the rights to this theme song, you know? And that's by Trevor Rabin, who was in this band called Yes. And I'm sure no one else in the room knows them because I'm an old man, but there was this band called Yes and they were really good. And Trevor Rabin was in it. So anyway, Remember the Titans. Everybody should watch this movie.
It really is a good, like, if you can get past the, like, the, you know, if you can get into it and sit through it.
Because it's corny on the level, but.
It is, but once you get into it, it's like you really do get into it. Like, I can't remember if it was at the end of the school year or during Christmas break, like right before Christmas break. I was showing it in the class just for the kids to have something to watch so they weren't just sitting there. And every kid wanted to finish it. Every kid was like, are we going to finish it? So I was like, okay, yeah. And they did get into it and they really liked it. So it is like, first glance, you might be like, oh, that's, like you said, one of those corny stories. But then when you really sit and watch it and watch the characters and just how they just keep overcoming all of these problems where, you know, they were really against a lot of what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
And they were able to overcome it. And I think it's important, especially for kids today, to see like, okay, these might be a different set of problems, but as long as you keep pushing and you keep trying, you will overcome it at some point. But if you give up, then you're definitely not going to. So I think it is an important message that our young kids out there and young adults out there need to be reminded of.
And the coming together too. My final thought, I guess, on it is the kids are the ones who get over the issues before the adults do.
Yeah.
The adults take much longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we all have to remember as adults is that young folks are much more open to change than we are.
Yes.
Take advantage of that because that's a good thing. Teach us a lesson or two.
Yeah, no, they definitely could.
So there we are. That's Remember the Titans. Check it out, folks. It is one of the best from a period of a lot of really fun, inspirational films, genre that's sadly gone, needs to come back. I think we could use a few of these. A few less superheroes, a few more of these.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're done with this, and it's time for, we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back, and you are going to get questions your students. So we'll be back in just a second with questions from students. Don't go away.
Whatever it is, it ain't blocking.
Give me a break.
You want a break? I'll give you a break. Me and Julius.
Let him in.
Get the rev once, just one time. I swear to God, I'm going to hit you so hard by the time you come to. Ooh, boy, you're going to need a new haircut. You understand me? Let's play, fellas.
On the ball. Let's run it again.
Let's go. Here we go.
Hey!
Let's go.
All
right.
My side.
Hey!
Come on, me.
You all right, Big Petey? You all right?
You really stuck him, Campbell.
Yeah, I love me a little contact, Petey.
This left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
And we're back for our final segment, questions from the students. Are you ready for this?
As Ready as I could ever be.
All right. So we had a couple situations where multiple kids asked the same question. So both Bailey and Kim asked, what made you so passionate about teaching forensics? We kind of covered it, but maybe we did not.
And I tell the kids this, maybe not in that same way, but seeing them get excited about it and them getting into it gets me more into it, because then I'm like, I want to be able to share more with them. I want to be able to teach more with them. So I kind of feed off of how they react to what I'm telling them or getting into or whatever it is that we're talking about that day. So it's, yes, it interested me once I started reading more about it and listening to all the different crime stories and things like that that are out there. But as far as teaching it go, it's the kids. It's seeing their excitement. It makes me even more excited to teach to them and teach them new things. And it's them. It's really how they respond.
You get that little bit of feedback, and then it multiplies so much within you. And then you just, that's what gives you all that energy.
That's exactly what it is. Yes. Because there have been times where there's certain topics that, you know, I would bring up to them and I did not think they were going to be as excited about it as they were. Like, I had thought about with hair, when you dye hair, you get something called a demarcation line. So the hair that actually gets dyed will be whatever color you dye it. And then the natural hair will be whatever natural color it's supposed to be. So one day I was like, you know what? It's so hard to find pictures of that online. Like, you wouldn't think it would be. So when I make their PowerPoints, and I can spend hours trying to look for pictures to show them. And I couldn't find a picture. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to have them look at a piece of hair and just look at it. So I gave them a bunch of my hair, because I do dye my hair, and they loved it. They loved trying to find the area of the hair where you could see the natural hair start to turn into the dyed hair. Like, they really got into it, and they were like, this was really fun. And so I'm like, okay, you know, and it gives me so much energy and motivation to want to do more. So then I start teaching myself more things, and it really is the kids and how they respond.
Do you hear that, kids? The woman gave her own hair.
It was so gross. I held up a whole bag. I go, this is how much I love you guys. I took out my hairbrush, but I told them I pulled it out of my hair, and they were like, oh my God. So it was funny. But yeah, and then we'll do weird things like ask other people to look at their hair. So there was one class where we didn't have anybody with natural, like really blonde hair. So one of the kids was like, oh, I can go ask so-and-so and go get some from them, like by the bathroom or whatever. And they did. They went and got hair samples from their friend.
Scavetti's hair collectors.
Yeah, I know. It's so creepy. Yeah,
you could have a hair collection club. There you go.
Yeah, we could.
That's disturbing. Let's move on.
Welcome to forensics.
Welcome to forensics. There you go. That was like the perfect advertisement.
Yes.
All right. So now we have our second question. Again, two students, Brianna and Ying, both asked this question. Mm-hmm. What's the most notable case you encountered in nursing?
Oh my gosh. This one was insane to me, and is what was even more like almost shocking or alarming, was that the doctor was so nonchalant about it. So there was this woman. She was one of the patients that I had during nursing school. And she had an unknown infection. They could not identify what caused an infection in this woman's leg. They know it started in the outer thigh, like buttocks area, but it actually had tunneled through her thigh, the back of her thigh, and created an actual tunnel that came out in her groin area. And you could take, like, I watched it. The doctor took this long Q-tip, like the really long ones, the swabs, and he put it all the way through and pulled it out the other side. Wow. Put it in a biohazard bag, took his gloves off, and just sat. But then I saw the doctor sit on this woman's bed, and I'm like, this lady has some unknown infection that is literally eating away at her flesh, and you're going to sit on her bed? Like, that's like a big no-no. But
yeah,
I guess he wasn't worried about it, but that was probably one of the, and I know that can happen.
Right.
You know, but actually seeing it was crazy because you're looking at this woman who looks perfectly healthy and she's got this little, almost like a hole on the side of her leg. And you would never have known just by looking at her that it's this infection that's literally eating away at her flesh. And I only had that patient for that one day. She wasn't there the next day. She got sent somewhere else. But it's so to this day, I still have no idea what was causing the infection. But the fact that I was at a teaching hospital in New York. So the fact that nobody at that facility could figure out what was causing this infection with this woman was like, you don't hear about that. Like normally it can be figured out. Like there's very few cases of these unknown infections. So that was crazy.
That's scary stuff.
Yeah. And you're right there next to it. So that one will always stick out in my head. Always.
And then for a final question, similar to that, Andrew asks, what forensics case is your favorite one to teach and why?
My favorite forensics case, it would probably be the Michael Peterson case.
Okay.
A lot of kids will probably know it as the staircase case. And it's just because you get to see all of the mistakes that can be made when forensics is not done properly and when it's not done right away. So there was just so much evidence in that case, but because the forensics was not done properly, it created a lot of problems for them to actually, well, they did convict Michael Peterson, but then he was able to get out on an Alford plea. And so he's out, but all the evidence that's there really does point to him or somebody. He was involved somehow and he was there when it happened. There's just so much evidence that you can talk about. And the thing with forensics that I tell the kids, yes, you need to know blood spatter if that's what you're going to do. If you're going to be fingerprints, then you need to know fingerprints or hair, whatever it is. But a lot of it is also just logic. You know, like someone will try to tell you a story that, oh, you know, I was over here when this happened. But you can look at the actual evidence and be like, no, there's no possible way you were on that side of the room. All of the evidence says you were over here. So, and that's when we talk about that case, it's just, you know, the kids really get into it when we discuss it. So a lot of times with lecture, it'll always start out as a lecture, but then some of them will turn into a whole group discussion and we'll be talking about it. But that case, it's just one of those ones where there's all of this forensic evidence and all of these things lining up, but because it wasn't collected properly or done at the right time, you can see how people can get away with stuff. Because that's one of the things that the kids will ask at some point is, you know, how is it with all of this science, how is it that people can get away with it? It's like, well, if it's not done right, you don't get to use it.
Right.
So, but that case is one that I'll get up, I'll start like, you know, showing them like, okay, if you're going to, you know, it's a case where someone was bludgeoned at the bottom of the stairs and there's blood spatter everywhere, but there's nothing on the ceiling. So normally when someone gets, you know, hit over and over again, there'll be blood on the ceiling just from cast off from the weapon. But then we had to remember, okay, but you're on the stairs. You're not going to be swinging the weapon the same way you would be if you were standing on just level ground. So it's just using that logic and thinking about, okay, well, yeah, there's no spatter on the ceiling, but in this certain case, there wouldn't be because of the positioning. So it's, yes, you need to know the forensics, but it's also just logically figuring it out. Does this make sense? Like, could this make sense?
I think that's so interesting because at the end of the day, a big part of what I think we're all teaching is logic and critical thinking.
Yes.
And it shows that we all have these different subjects and we try to teach all these fine elements of these different subjects. But at the core of it is, does it make logical sense?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is just so absolutely important. And it's the sort of thing that doesn't get measured very well with a test or a multiple choice test or something like that. But when you wind up with these cool projects like this, where it's something where it's high interest, and then all of a sudden, bam, you're teaching critical thinking.
Yep. And they don't even know that they're doing it.
Right. That's really cool. And then the other thing is that, you know, a lot of these procedures are there for reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And those reasons are very often because bad things happened.
Yes, they,
you know.
And as so the kids know, it can happen anywhere.
Like, right. And you know, we tend to, in this profession, wind up in a situation where we're constantly telling kids, well, don't do that, do this, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important. And so many of these rules can seem just so out there and so weird. And it's like, why is that rule there? And then it's like, for each of these rules, there were probably 10 real life situations.
Yep.
And it has tremendous consequences.
Yeah.
You know, so kudos to that. You're teaching a lot of cool stuff over there in forensics.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. It's not just, you know, CSI, like what we see on TV. It's way more than that. We dive into it so much. And it is. It's a great course. Like, I was not expecting it to become basically like my passion. Like, I love teaching biology. Don't get me wrong. I love teaching that course and that class to the kids. But forensics is like, it's like, I love teaching that class.
So there you go. Another podcast, another person who's ridiculously passionate about what they teach.
I love it.
Before we close out, is there anything coming up in school, out of school, clubs, your life, anything that you wanted to promote, or you feel like you got it all covered?
No, I think we're pretty much covered.
All right. Well, I'm going to do my acknowledgement. So this has been Pulled Up, a co-production of the Coral Springs High School ACE Media Studies Program and the Coral Springs High School TV Production Program. Special thanks to Mr. Place for pulling all of this together and making me and everybody else here look very good. Definite thanks to Ms. Vivian Suarez, our former principal, for greenlighting this series, and to our new principal, Mr. Dwayne Dixon, for greenlighting it again.
Yes.
Because you can see this is a good thing. The podcast logo was designed by ACE Media Studies students Brendan Kenny and Vanessa Romshall. Special thanks to the faculty, staff, and administration of Coral Springs High School for coming in and pulling up the students every darn day. Extra special thanks to you, Ms. Scavetti.
Aw, thank you, Mr. Aronson.
Had a great time. We're glad you were here. And until next time, thank you for listening. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are. Bye-bye.
Pull me up, pull me up, up, up.